Thank you very much. So I understand it's early in the morning, and probably some, at least I myself, need a huge dose of caffeine to wake up. So I try to make my talk easier, and I also apologize for not going high tech, but you know, probably a lot of you know about the famous or infamous paper by Volodya Peller, who said that computer presentations should be banned. Okay, I'm not at such extremes. Probably a lot of you saw me doing Beamer presentations as well, but you know, having six blackboards instead of one screen is a great advantage. So let me start with kind of setup with the corona problem. And sometimes when I was kind of teaching and talking about corona problem, I said for a shock value that corona problem started as a problem at about maximal ideals, but who gives a damn about maximal ideals? Okay, so those of you who do give a damn about maximal ideals, please do not be offended. I just do it as a shock value, but for me it's kind of very natural analytic problem. So suppose we have, so what is corona problem? Suppose we have a matrix function F with entries in analytic functions, and it is of size, say, n by m, so, and we assume that it is a tall matrix, so n is greater than m, so f is a tall matrix like me. Or sometimes we even can say that f is in H infinity bounded functions with values whose values are operators from one Hilbert space to another, and E star, it doesn't mean double pre, dual pre-dual, it's just kind of notation, so two different Hilbert spaces. What is corona problem? So we assume that F has bounded left inverse. So we assume, and we can write it as F of Z star F of Z uniformly bounded from zero, where the delta squared, let's do it for uniformly bounded away from zero, so there is bounded left inverse. And we ask if this implies that there exist G bounded analytic function. Okay, now it's M by N, so it has to be a long matrix such that GF is identity. So it's just, can we find a bounded and analytic left inverse? And of course, I did not say about domain. So what domain are interested? So we're interested in the domain omega, which is, can be unit disk or unit ball in d-dimensional complex space, or polydisk in z-dimensional complex space, or just general subset of a complex plane. And As I said, that everything is known in this case and nothing is known in the other cases. So that is the corona problem. Now, what is a completion problem? So what is a completion problem? And okay, let us ask when we can easily say that a tall matrix is left invertible. So we have this tall matrix F is left invertible. So it's okay, if we can complete it to a square invertible matrix, this part is definitely left invertible. So if you have invertible matrix, any number of columns of this invertible matrix gives us left invertible. So that is a completion problem. So let there exist G in H infinity such that GF is identically one. So let us have left invertible. Does this imply that there exists bounded analytic function of appropriate size such that the matrix, we take matrix F and then we add columns of matrix F Tweedle is invertible. In H infinity or invertible for all the invertible in H infinity or uniformly invertible in the disk. So can we complete the problem? And just to say you that the answer is well known, yes, for the disk, and the answer is I don't know for the rest of the problem. Now let's talk about geometry and kind of geometric approach, and it's probably not this kind of geometry that people do in geometry consider an interesting stuff, because they like some non-trivial topology and I like something very simple, angle between subspaces projection. And I would like to state a very simple lemma that kind of lemma due to Nikolai Nikolsky that says the following, that let F star F is uniformly bounded away from zero. Again, the same assumption that F is a H infinity matrix. The following statements are equivalent. And the first statement is that there exists G in H infinity GF is identically one. So there exists analytic left inverse. And the second property that is equivalent, that there exists function P in H infinity, and that is now squared H infinity such that P of Z is a projection onto the range of f of z onto the range of f of z. And by projection, I do not mean orthogonal projection. Sometimes it's what is called sometimes it's called idempotent. So the main property is that P squared is P. But it is a projection, so it is projection on one subspace parallel to some other subspace. So geometrically, if you don't know orthogonality, it is a projection. And that is kind of twice surprising about. Oh, and by the way, of course, I hope everybody kind of understand why this is a corona. Why is this corona? Corona theorem. Because if my matrix F is just a column, just a finite column, then this implication under question mark is just the famous corona theorem in the disk. It's just this. And of course, the matrix case follows by simple algebra from the corona theorem. So if you can do it for, if you can do corona theorem for columns, we can do it for matrices. Of course, when you want to do estimates, that's another matter. And that is. Now, for me, I sometimes call this lemma twice surprising lemma because I was surprised twice. First, I did not believe that it is true, because you know you always kind of in your mind you think about projection of being orthogonal projections, and there are no non-trivial orthogonal projection. By the way, that will be the quiz question: why there is no non-trivial analytic orthogonal projection? And the second, that when I realized how simple the proof is. So let me kind of sketch the proof. And the one implication that one implies two is very simple. We just put P being, so if GF is identity, then FG is this projection of, and let me show you that it is projection because P squared is FG, and this GF gives us identity, so that is which is such as P, and of course a little bit of more work requires that it is indeed projection onto the range, but it's kind of very easy. Now, let me explain kind of the other implication. And the other direction, so that two implies one. So why in existence of analytic projections imply existence of left invert? And kind of there are kind of three statements, several steps. And the first step is that a local left invertibility so find local analytic left and inverse is easier because let's see, we can find some say G of Z naught multiplied by F of Z naught is identity. So fixed point Z naught. Okay, we can find left inverse to this one particular matrix because of this condition that we have left invertibility. We have left invertibility, so we can find left invertible. Now what I do, I take this G of Z naught, I multiplied by f of z. Okay, I do not get identity, but I will get small perturbation of identity when z is close to the knot. Small perturbation is identity is invertible, and so I get this identity plus delta of z inverse g of z naught f of z is identically 1. So local left invertibility is easier. And of course, we can kind of try to glue it up. We can get global left analytic left inverse. Unfortunately, we have no way to control estimate that. The second statement is uniqueness of left inverse. And you say, come on, it's impossible. When I teach linear algebra, I tell my students that left inverse is not unique. And okay, let me say what I mean. That by uniqueness, I mean that B1A is B2A is identity. So we have two left inverses of the same operators. Then, if we take operator B1, and I want to say that it is B2, that they are equal, of course. They are equal if I restrict them onto the range of A. So if we restrict, so on the range of A, we do not have any choice with left inverse. It has to get everything back. And that is kind of the second simple observation, uniqueness of the left inverse. And now what I can do, I can write bounded left inverse. And if I take something like f star f inverse f star, that is kind of canonical left inverse for the operator. Now, so if you get it, f multiplied by f, it will be identically 1. Now, I can get projection P here inside. It does not change anything, so that is my left inverse, and that is bounded, because this beast is bounded, and the projection is bounded. Now, why it's analytic? Because instead of this, I can take a local analytic so I can in a neighborhood of a point I can take local analytic left inverse and then I hit it by the same projection P. So I have this non-analytic left inverse, I have another left inverse, and I hit them both by P. So effectively, I restrict everything onto the range of F. And on the range of F, they coincide. So this beast equals that beast. This shows it is bounded. This shows that it's analytic. And that is universal proof. It's one of the statements that works for any omega. And that is. Now, let me.
There is a mistake.
Oh. I. Sorry. Now let me. Let me stay. Let me now discuss the completion problem kind of from the point of view of this kind of analytic projection, and that is very simple. So we go into the completion problem. So we know that GF is identically one. We form analytic projection P, which is FG, which is and now we consider co of the is to be complementary projection identity minus P of Z. So we have like two analytic family of projections onto the range of F and to some complementary subspace, and the angle between them is kind of uniformly bounded away from zero. That means that, and then we consider this coup applied to H2 of size n, so of n copies of H2 with values in Cn, and that is the invariant subspace. Now we multiply and so it will be theta of H2 so where theta is inner function. And that is Dirac theorem description of invariant subspace. And inner means that theta of Z is isometry almost everywhere on the boundary of the diff. So boundary values are isometric. Note that Q is a Born square matrix. It's n by n matrix, and theta is n minus n. So and your matrix, if you have F and you add extra columns at theta as extra columns, this is invertible. And to see that it's invertible, we only have to see that theta is left invertible, and it requires a little bit of work, but it's not something easy. And again, it's in the matrix case, it's kind of universal property. It can be done if we have something like that. It can be proved for the general case. Now, sorry? Because multiplication by Z commutes with multiplication by analytic matrix function. Yeah, that is. that is. And by the way, this result is sometimes for the disk is known as Talokonnikov's lemma. And kind of essentially, if you look at his proof, you kind of you will find kind of all those ingredients hidden over there. But I think in the think about analytic projection, make it a lot of simpler. Now, let me kind of pose a question here, because if we want to generalize this completion problem, and it looks like a little bit easier problem than Corona problem, and if we want to generalize to poly disk or to the ball, so we need Darling for, say, a unit ball or poly disk. And of course, I am not so naive to expect inner function. And of course, I know that in general, Darling theorem doesn't hold for ball of the poly disk. But there are very kind of two things that give us hope. First of all, we have a very special problem. So we have ranges of analytic projections. So our invariant subspace is very special. So we have just the ranges of analytic projections. So it's not a general case. And the second, okay, I'm not requesting inner function. I'm only requesting kind of almost inner function. Something that theta star of the is, say, between is bounded above on the boundary where omega is either ball or the poly disk, and d means either the boundary or distinguished boundary in the case of poly disk. So we don't need it to be isometry. We need it to be like uniformly invertible. That's all on the boundary. So I don't kind of really know, and from my point of view, it's kind of interesting problem in geometry. Unfortunately, geometers do not give a damn about this, because topology here is trivial. Everything is about estimates. Now, let me continue kind of further and talk about a different topic, and let's this different topic, and the different topic was let me talk about a nudge problem. that problem, and so, and the Sikka-Salvi-Knight problem was that, okay, if we have operator-valued function, so if our matrices are invertible, does this condition still implies existence of bounded analytical left inverse? And the answer is unfortunately no. Kind of the and the con or if you don't not comfortable with constants with operator valued constants, you can see how the constants, how the estimates go when m and n go to infinity. And it is, and that is also dimension one problem. So what is known that, so we have f, say, in H infinity n by m, and we know that estimates blow when m goes to infinity. By the way, estimates independent of n are known. So estimates blow, and that is, by the way, one of my kind of earlier results. And I will try to explain from the point now what from the kind of this geometric viewpoint. Now, what about codimension one problem? You see, for square matrices, corona problem is trivial. Because for square matrices, this condition means that its matrix is invertible. Okay, let's see that our matrix is almost square. So let our matrix is of size m and m plus 1. And there was kind of a hope at some point that for in this case, and even in more general case, and one can be replaced by 10 or by any constant, estimates do not blow. But in fact, it turns out to be false. Even in this case, estimates blow exponentially. So it's the estimates. And how do we get, how one can get the estimate, the counterexample to this kind of problems? Again, geometric approach. Okay, let we have E of Z being the range of F of Z, the range of analytic projection. So we have analytic family of subspaces. Now, if we have E of Z orthogonal complement, so is it analytic family of subspaces? It's, if you check, it's anti-analytic family of subspaces. So, or I can say, in the variable z bar. So it's analytic in the variable z bar. So, kind of, it's kind of the same. Now, if we have P of Z is analytic projection onto the range, onto the this analytic family of subspaces onto E of Z. So we have bounded analytic projection. Okay. can you write a formula for the bounded anti-analytic projection onto the complement, onto the orthogonal complement? I can say that if I take Q of V and take adjoint, it will be projection onto E of Z perpendicular. So it will be projection onto E of Z, and that is basically basic operator theory, the relation between the range and kernel of adjoint. Range the operator and the kernel of adjoint is something so what we have here is the following, that bounded analytic projection onto E of Z exists if and only if there exists bounded analytic projection onto the bounded anti-analytic projection onto the range of orthogonal complement, which is in our case one-dimensional, which is in our case one-dimensional. So it's kind of usual corona problem. And of course, it's, you can say that it's anti-analytic, but if you take a new variable V bar, it's still old corona problem. And that gives us kind of a counter example that if we take the matrix phi 1 function phi 2 phi m and get here A and the rest is 0, so that is the matrix of size m by m plus 1, where A is about delta and phi's are just some huge powers of Z. Phi's are just some powers of Z. And you see, we can easily write vector which is orthogonal complement. A vector which is orthogonal complement is can be written as a to the power m, a to the power m minus 1. Phi 1, a to the power m minus 2. Phi 1, phi 2. And so on. And the last term will be phi 1, phi 2, phi m. And kind of to be absolutely correct, I have to put complex conjugation. And basically, phi's are just some powers of Z. Choosing appropriate to make this matrix kind of left invertible in L infinity, satisfying this corona condition. And you can see that this does not satisfy the corona condition. And so kind of idea, very simple, and I will not kind of present what powers should I take and I'm not going to do calculations, but it's kind of elementary linear algebra. If you have this idea, if you understand that this has that this satisfy corona condition with tiny, tiny delta. So it's practically corona condition fails when m goes to infinity, so it has bounded analytic projection but only of huge norm, and so here we have bounded analytic projection of a huge norm and constants blow up. And again, the lower bounds are now almost as upper bounds. So that is now you see that is kind of the very, so this kind of geometric viewpoint is very helpful. And there is also one question that kind of bugged me a lot of times. So let's go back to the classical corona problem. F is just a column. And we can always assume that our column is inner function. So on the boundary, sum of squares is 1. Because we can always divide by appropriate outer function. So basically kind of corona condition, this condition is given by, is should be determined only by the ranges, only by the analytic family of subspaces. So how we determine this corona condition as an analytic family of subspaces? And now let me state kind of a problem, and theorem so and so we have this from that left we have E of Z be analytic family of subspaces. And let also pi of Z be the orthogonal, now orthogonal projection onto the E of Z. And now pi of Z is not analytic. But by the way, the fact that P is analytic can be, the fact that E of Z is analytic can be expressed as P, the P is 0. So that is where D is usual D derivative. Or equivalently, d bar of pi, d bar of pi, pi is 0. So, because one of the statements is complementary to each other. And we ask when they exist, when there exists analytic projection P projection, so when there exists a bounded analytic projection, and that is my result, our result with Breitwick, with Breitwick, that there are several conditions uh, that this follows is the equation Laplace Uvets equal the norm d pi of z, or we can put d bar here, has bounded solution and of course, because solution of this equation is given by Green's function, we can replace equality by inequality, so whatever you prefer. And this condition 2 follows, in fact, from the, can be restated in more kind of convenient terms, can be restated in more convenient terms, namely, that it follows from this condition that first the measure d pi of z log 1 over mod z dx dy is Carlesson, that is part A, and part B is that d pi of z is bounded by constant over 1 minus mod z. So it behaves like derivative of a bounded analytic function. So it follows. And of course it looks like sufficient condition, but let me... Oh yeah, yeah, sorry, norm squared, yes. Norm squared, yes. The norm squared of this and what I can say, that also kind of remark, that if dimension E of Z is finite or codimension E of Z is finite, in the case of finite dimension and codimension, we can say that the other implication also hold. So in fact, so we can replace this statement by, so we can replace implication by, so we get necessary and sufficient conditions. And basically, that is a very simple, why in the case of finite dimension we have this condition. We have this condition. Let me write the formula for pi of z. It is f star f inverse f star. Now, if we take derivatives, we essentially get, if you take derivative, I can write the formula for the d derivative of this expression, but I don't have to. We just get terms, several terms that include f prime times something bounded. So we get f prime times something bounded. And for f prime, chromatic valued functions. If we put here f prime, derivative of analytic function, of course that is Carlisson measure, and that is also true. So that is kind of okay. Now let me state a couple more things that what is this quantity? This quantity d pi norm squared is in fact the curvature. So this matrix d pi is maybe d bar pi, I'm not sure, is what is called second fundamental form. In the complex geometry, and second fundamental form, in geometry, curvature is a tensor, so it's a matrix from our point of view. Now, if you consider sub-bundle, the second fundamental form appears when we compute curvature of a sub-bundle, and that is essentially in our case, that is DP's second fundamental form, and I also can say that this quantity DP of the norm squared, and let me put here Hilbert-Schmidt of Frobenius norm, just sum of squares of entries, that is exactly a Laplacian of the determinant F star F. So and that is calculation, and of course kind of if we multiply F by some, say, scalar analytic function, does not change, because so Laplacian of the determinant. So it's kind of a curvature. A condition. And again, of course, analog of this description for the polydisk would solve Corona problem, but I don't think it's much of the simplification. It's kind of maybe an interesting point of view. And I think I can mention also the promised problem of ideals, and what does it say, the problem of ideals? So suppose we want to have solve Bézout equation. So suppose now our F is just column F1 Fn, and G is just row G1 Gn, and we want to find and let tau be just scalar H infinity function. And we want to solve GF is tau, not 1. And we have obvious necessary conditions that tau of Z by absolute value should be bounded by some constant, we can the norm of F of Z. The norm of vector f of z at this particular point. And It is old counterexample by Rao that it. So we want to whether it implies that there exists infinity. And of course, the answer is old counterexample. The answer is no. It's old counterexample by Rao. Okay, let's we put some P. And kind of the interesting question is that if P is strictly greater than 2, then the answer is yes. So then we have implication. Then this condition implies if the P is less than or equal 2, then the general answer is that it does not imply this condition. And we want to kind of, and so this case was done by many authors. I don't know who did first and who did the last. The case P less than 2 follows from some results of Tolokolnikov and P equal to it, kind of my result, but it's basically just some clever tricks involving interpolation. And but I want to talk something about a little bit of positive results, and positive results would be something like positive results. So suppose we have condition that tau of v is less than, yeah, it's one, less than phi of f of z, phi of, and the question was what phi of z can be taken to get this result, to get this result. And for a long time, the best known result would be phi of s is, we have to, s squared. Now, s squared is too little. We need something kind of smaller. So you have to log 1 over s and to the power 3/2 and something like log with some power. And you know, this 3/2 annoyed me just a great deal, because for people who do with estimates and corona problem, they know that with the estimate we have this log in the power 1, and that's all. And basically I try to, when I kind of use the same kind of analytic projection method. It's basically of course, the projection something like P of z divided by tau of z should be bounded. So, but I was able to do it for the function f of log 1 over s to the power p, where p any number greater than 1, or to the s squared or to the power s squared of log 1 over s log 1 over s to the power p, and basically any function, and basically the condition just involves that this has to be integrable at infinity. And again, that is a geometric idea. Okay, thank you very much for the attention. And no, no.
Because why not? All will be changing, but maybe it can go.
Probably.
The same condition problem, and that's a great difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to think about it, because kind of when you do with analytic, it's local condition, and
yeah,
with global condition it's something can be preserved, but yeah, it might be kind of yeah in. Yeah.
What about the multiplier algebra on the Unix?
Yeah, well, I was kind of I started thinking about this question when I was preparing this talk, so unfortunately I kind of cannot say anything. Kind of interesting yet, but yes, I kind of started thinking maybe it's possible to do something with approach for multiplier algebra and so on. Do you mean for general function or for the projections? Yeah, I suspect so, but kind of I don't know the proof. I suspect so, but yeah, I suspect that A implies B, but kind of I cannot prove it, and then it's doesn't seem to be very important. Of course, if it's general function, for general function, of course, A does not imply B. It's only for the.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.